Which brings me to one interesting point that you can think over. One very great difference has taken place since the time Marx wrote and now. When Marx wrote, there were something like nearly 2 million men and women domestic servants, indoor servants, outdoor flunkies, and so on. And you notice the interesting thing. When Marx wrote, the capitalist or the landowner got his profit or his rent, and then he built up his social status by employing a lot of domestic workers, men and women domestic workers, who came out of the profit he got after he got his profit. Now, since that time, this great army of domestic workers has almost disappeared. There are hardly any of them left. I mean, I don't know what the figure is. It's very, very small. So now, what you've got instead, it's just as if, whereas in Marx's time there were nearly 2 million domestic servants, whom the capitalist employed out of his profits, now they've disappeared, and they've been replaced by a great army of 2 million civil servants and local government people. But you see, the capitalist doesn't employ them out of his profits. They, or a large part of them, are paid for out of the tax that the government levies on the capitalist profits before the capitalist gets it. Well, of course, it's an interesting statistical problem, and I don't know anybody who actually has dealt with it, but it is something worth bearing in mind when you think of the division of the national income. I'm now going to deal with this interesting and controversial question about the supposed falling rate of profit. But before I deal with it, I want to repeat a warning that Marx and Engels gave about treating economic laws as if they precisely reflected what goes on in the real world. In these days, the government published great masses of statistics on prices and wages and population and ages and all sorts of things. And because they are statisticians and because they have to present them in a tidy form, they present them as percentages, usually carried to one point of decimals. In other words, they'll tell you, for example, what's the current figure that prices and rents and so on have increased in the last 12 months by 21.8%. Well, you get used to using these figures and you've got to use them. They would tell you, they would tell you how, by what percentage to one place of decimals wages have gone up in the last year or so. Well, you simply must not believe that these figures are strictly and accurately true. Not the fault of the statisticians. It's impossible for the government statistical office to go and examine 56 million people every month and find out, you know, what they're spending and what they're consuming and what their wages are. So they do it by various sampling methods. They rely on a selected number of companies to give them information. And you've got to remember that it's human beings who provide the information and make use of it. And so they're all of them subject to quite a large margin of error. And you've got to remember this and treat them accordingly. Don't treat them as if they, as if they really are correct up to one point of decimals. They're not. But nevertheless, they're the best you can get. And in the course of time, they become more accurate. But they've always got to be treated with reserve. Now, Marx used the concept of an average rate of profit and the concept that that actual rates of profit all tended to become uniform. In other words, you tended to reach a situation where every capitalist who invested £1,000 would all tend to get exactly the same return on it. And, people read this and they argue about it, you see. But you've got to remember, and Engels was very insistent in warning. He wrote a letter to Schmidt in 1895 about this. It's a quite valid conception to say that if you start with a situation where in all different industries, capitalists are getting a different rate of profit, in other words, in one industry they're getting 10%, another 12%, 15%, and so on, that there will be a tendency for them to come to the same level, for the very good reason that if there is a very high rate of profit in one industry, capital will flow into that industry, there will be increased competition, prices will come down, and the rate of profit will come down. On the other hand, if there are some industries with a very low rate of profit, no new capital will be invested into it, there will be less competition, and prices will tend to rise. And if you imagine one lot of prices falling and another lot rising, you are moving to a point where, so to speak, Marx can say, there is a tendency towards the rate of profit becoming a single rate all over industry. But then Engels wrote to, use your own experience. You look at the company reports that get into the newspapers or read the city columns, you'll see there's an enormous range of profits. In the Financial Times summaries that I referred to, the ones in 1978, they ranged on this selection of companies. They were companies which had reported in January 1958 and were summarised in the Financial Times in February. The rates of profit on capital employed ranged from about 2 or 3% for the shipping group, right up to 44% for machine tools. And I should say here that the Financial Times calculations were not made on precisely the basis Marx would have made it, but they were an approximation of this, and they gave you a realistic picture of what actually goes on. Well, you see, now shipping profits are notoriously volatile. You'll get shipping companies will have a run of 2 or 3 years when they'll make enormous profits. And then they may be followed by 2 or 3 years in which they're making losses when there's a glut of laid up ships and so on. And that machine tool group, 2 years later, they weren't making 44%, they were making very much less. Now, what Engels wrote to Schmidt, and by the way, you'll find it in a little volume called On Capital, written by Engels, quite a useful little thing. He warned Schmidt against supposing that the idea of a general rate of profit meant that in the real world the rate of profit actually is uniform. And I quote from Engels, "At any moment it only exists approximately. In reality the rates of profit vary from business to business and from year to year. The general rate of profit exists solely as an average of many businesses and of a series of years." And to emphasise his point, he was rather sarcastic to Schmidt. He hasn't got Schmidt's letter there, but one can imagine Schmidt had written to him and said, look, you talk about a uniform rate of profit. What is it, you see? And Engels writes back and says, to emphasise the point, he says that if you suppose that there is a rate of profit of 14.876934%, and you think that the real world is organised like this, you just do not understand the nature of profit and of economic laws in general. And he went on to say that it's not only true of this concept of the average rate of profit, but it's true of the labour theory of value, it is true of wages and of prices, that they're all of them generalisations, and in the real world there are always variations in this. I know in the trade union world there's a Kant phrase about the rate for the job. Well, there are some industries in which it has a certain meaning in the actual factory, but over the country as a whole, there is no such thing. There's an enormous range of rates for the same kind of job. It depends on all sorts of things. But nevertheless, it's quite valid for Marx to lay down a general proposition about what determines wages. It's quite legitimate. But remember that these are concepts that you must not apply literally in the real world. So Engels went on to say that all economic laws are only tendencies. And this, of course, applies to Marx's theory of market prices as well as to wages. But nevertheless, underlying all of these things, even although the real world isn't exactly a mirror of the theory, underlying them all is the labour theory of value, and it is a perfectly valid theory and by far the best theory for explaining all these things, including prices, that any economist has ever produced. I now come to this question of the Marx on the falling rate of profit. You'll find Marx dealt with it, by the way, in Volume 3 of Capital, Chapters 13, 14 and 15. And the basis of Marx's theory was that with the progressive use of more and more constant capital, that is machines, plants, buildings, and the smaller and smaller proportion of capital, a variable capital, that's capital paying wages to living workers who are in the factories, this actually is going on. There are some exceptions, but broadly speaking, there is more and more machinery employed in industry year by year. And in each factory, so to speak, the proportion spent on wages becomes less in relation to the amount spent on machinery. So for every £1,000 of capital, a smaller and smaller portion goes to the employment of workers in the form of wages. So the number of workers in relation to the total capital falls. But as it's only the living workers who create surplus value, it follows that as a result of this tendency, the rate of surplus value tends to fall. And we're talking about the rate of surplus value, that is, surplus value in relation to the total capital invested. And it's the rate, not the amount. It's the percentage rate. Now, if that is all that Marx had to say, he would have been committing himself to the proposition that the rate of profit has fallen and will fall and must fall. And unfortunately, a lot of people imagine this is what Marx did say. But actually, Marx didn't say anything of the kind. You notice this, the theory of the falling rate of profit didn't start with Marx. Ricardo put forward his theory of the falling rate of profit in 1821. So for a century and a half, according to Ricardo's theory, or according to this interpretation of Marx's theory from 1865 onwards, the rate of profit is supposed to have been falling. Well, if the rate of profit has been falling continuously since 1821, there's not likely to be very much left of it now. But in fact, while Ricardo's theory was quite wrong and has been disproved by event, he based his theory on the supposition that it would become more and more costly to produce food, and as food prices went up, the workers' wages would go up, so there would be left from the capitalists. So year after year, according to Ricardo, the rate of profit would fall. But in fact, of course, the cost of food has not gone up like this. Agriculture has been capitalised and mechanised like other industries, and the production of food has followed the laws of commodities in general and not taken the view that Malthus and others thought, that the price of food would constantly rise. But as I say, Marx didn't say anything of the kind. What Marx did say, and in the Kerr edition of the third volume of Capital, you'll find it on page 272, what he said was this. Marx pointed out that his problem was how to explain the fact that the rate of profit had not fallen as much as it would have fallen on the basis of the tendency that he already referred to for the falling rate of profit. And he posed the question himself, how is it that this fall is not greater or more rapid? And he answered it with the statement, there must be some counteracting influences at work which thwart and annul this general law, leaving to it merely the character of a tendency. In other words, Marx was not saying the rate of profit is going on falling. Marx said there is a tendency for the rate of profit to fall for the reasons he gave, but that it has been thwarted and annulled by a lot of counter tendencies. And he listed them. One of them was increased exploitation of the workers. Marx pointed out, you see, if the capitalist could get more surplus value out of the workers, he could offset any tendency for the rate of profit to fall. Well, you can really dismiss that one as far as this country is concerned. The rate of exploitation of the workers has certainly not increased since 1865. Another one was the depression of wages below their value. In other words, if owing to whatever reason, wages really were forced down to the bare subsistence level, again, the amount and the rate of profit would be rising in spite of this other tendency for them to fall. Another one, a very important one, was the cheapening of the elements of constant capital itself. By this, Marx meant that the value of constant capital and machinery and so on itself tends to fall as a result of the increased productivity of labour. And he said that in some instances, the value of new constant capital could be less than the value of the capital that would be placed. Now, generally, you expect if some process has been in operation for a number of years and a capitalist decides to put in a more modern one, you expect that he'll have to pay more for the new one than he paid for the old one. And I'm not thinking of inflation here. I'm just thinking of the fact that it's likely to be more complicated than the old one. But in fact, as Marx pointed out, sometimes a discovery is made which doesn't lead the capitalist to have to invest more capital, but enables him to get precisely the same result by investing less capital in some different process. And there is an interesting example. There was an American chemical company set up in this country just after the war, and they spent some tens of millions putting up chemical plant. And 3 years later, they reported in their annual report to their shareholders that if they had delayed setting up their factory for 3 years, in the meantime, some new process had come into use about the refining of chemicals, they could have built that plant for a third of what it actually cost them. If they'd waited 3 years, they could have built the same plant for a third of the cost. Now, you see, if they had built the same plant for a third of the cost, this would raise the rate of profit on this concern. Another of these counteracting factors Marx mentioned was relative overpopulation. In other words, heavy unemployment. Suppose you've got a lot of workers with a low standard of living coming into an industrialised area and depressing wages. This also would tend to put up the rate of profit. And he also said that there were some luxury trades started off with a relatively low constant capital and relatively high variable capital, giving increased surplus value and offsetting the tendency of the rate of profit to fall. Well, that is not only true in case of luxury trades, but it can often be true if some new product comes on the market. In the early years, it will show a very high rate of profit, and that entering into the average will tend to raise the rate of profit generally. Another counteracting tendency Marx mentioned was the increase of foreign trade, including investment in the colonies. Now, at the time Marx wrote, it would have been a question of British capital going out to the colonies and getting a much higher rate of profit in some of them than they could get in Britain. But you will have noticed a curious thing. Some months ago, the Thatcher government abolished the last of the exchange regulations, making it easy and legal for people with capital in this country to invest it abroad. And immediately there was, not a very large, but quite a big flow of British capital into foreign countries where they could get a higher rate of profit than they could get in this country. So to sum this all up, after you've considered not only the tendency, but all the counteracting tendencies, you're left with the same position Marx was in, that this is the tendency for a rate of profit to fall was only a tendency, and that you couldn't consider it at all, except in relation to all the countervailing tendencies. And so we're now left with the same problem that faced Marx, and there's more information available now probably. What actually is the rate of profit, and has the rate of profit actually fallen? You might think that it might be a simple matter to find out whether the rate of profit has fallen, but in fact it is not a simple matter to find it out, for several reasons. One, a lot of the information you cannot get because companies don't publish it and the government statisticians are not interested in getting it. Secondly, it's often difficult to interpret because if you try to do it, you've got to make a certain amount of guesswork. And thirdly, you have to remember that the rate of profit may be falling for 2 or 3 years running and then rising for 2 or 3 years. And it may be rising in one country while it's falling in another. And then this actually does go on. But I've got here a summary of efforts various people have made to give validity or to say actually what has happened since Marx wrote. Marx himself remarked on the fact that the general rate of profit, in spite of the continual variations of the particular rates of profit, in which a variation in one sphere is offset by an operate variation in another sphere, varies only over long intervals. In other words, Marx himself had noticed that in spite of there being one tendency for the rate of profit to fall, that in actual practice in 19th century England, you had long periods where the rate of profit didn't fall at all. And when it did fall, as Marx also pointed out, it didn't fall as much as you would have expected for the reason that there were these counteracting tendencies. Professor Bowley, making some studies about the 19th century, found that in the period 1860 to 1875, there was an enormous increase of profits in Great Britain. Well, now, while Bowley didn't put it in the form of actual rate of profit on capital invested, it was so enormous that it's almost certain that in those 15 years, the rate of profit itself was rising. And this, by the way, was one of the periods about which Marx himself wrote. The Bank of England, recently having access to government information, has shown that there was a big fall in the rate of profit in British industry since 1960 up to... a fall from 1960 to 1975, and then a small upturn from 1976 and 1977. And Lloyds Bank collected a lot of information showing that a similar movement took place in Germany. In other words, in Germany, from 1960 to 1975, there was a tendency for the rate of profit to fall, and in the next 2 years, it rose again somewhat. In 1935, John Strachey, who claimed to know all about Marx, wrote a book called The Nature of Capitalist Crisis, and in it he claimed that in Britain there had been a big and continuous fall in the rate of profit, and not only that it had taken place, but he didn't know of any economist who disputed it. And unfortunately, although it's quite a big book, Strachey didn't give you the evidence on which he based this, except on one point, which I'll come to later. In 1958, a book was published in America called The Falling Rate of Profit, a man named Joseph Gilman, who made a meticulous examination of all the information available in America, and the conclusion he reached was that in a long period before 1914, the rate of profit in America had been falling, but that from 1920 onwards, the rate had gone up and down, and that in 1939 it was slightly higher than it was in 1920. Now here you see, you get the sort of picture. It wouldn't have surprised Marx, because Marx didn't suppose there was a simple answer to it. But you get this picture in America, a continuous fall for many years down to 1914, from 1920 up to 1939. The First City National Bank of New York collected a lot of information on American sources and reached the conclusion that in American manufacturing industries as a whole, the rate of profit after paying tax, by the way, the others all worked it out on before tax, Citibank worked it out on the amount after tax, that the rate of profit had risen and fallen in booms and slumps, but that in the 50 years from 1925 to 1975, it had remained remarkably stable. In other words, that it rose and fell about, sometimes quite sharp rises and falls, but after 50 years, it was stabilized. It was, in fact, at the same kind of rate that it had been 25 years earlier. So while it is certain, I think it's certain, that the rate of profit has been falling in British manufacturing industries, it is equally certain, even in this country, that, for example, the oil industry has not had any falling rate of profit. Their rate of profit has been leaping up in the last few years. And the same thing is true of the oil-producing countries as a whole. So you get this unbalanced picture. You can have British manufacturing industry in recent years showing a falling rate of profit under the special conditions of Britain. You can find the American industry over 50 years showing, in effect, a stable line. And you can have the oil-producing countries showing a rising rate of profit. I now want to... I mentioned Strachey earlier, his book in 1935, and it's got one very interesting point in it. Strachey had this belief that the rate of profit had been falling and would go on falling. And one of his reasons was the supposed enormous increase in productivity. He argued like this. He said, the workers' output's increasing fantastically year by year. The market will be flooded with consumer goods. They can't be sold. The capitalists will make no profits. Obviously, the rate of profit will fall, and then, as he put it, capitalism will jam. He claimed, he gave some sort of evidence to prove that workers' output had been increasing. And one of the examples he gave was the Austin Motor Company, but he said What is true of the Austin Motor Company is true of all British industries, and it is true of all countries in the capitalist world, that the output had been increasing enormously. Well, he claimed to prove that the output of the Austin Motor Company workers in the 12 years from 1922 to 1934 had been multiplied 7 times. In other words, that each worker in 1934 was producing 7 times as much as he had been producing 12 years earlier. Well, this was complete and utter nonsense. What Strachey had done was the same error that I pointed out last time or the time before that Adam Smith made about his pin makers, and that the Labour Party made when they said that output of the workers had multiplied 1,000-fold. He worked it out not on the whole of the labour required to produce motor cars, but he worked it out on the number of workers actually employed in the assembly plant, in the factory. And in actual fact, you see, he claimed that it was true of British industry generally. Well, if you look at the output of British industry generally, in those 12 years, 1922 to 1934, it hadn't been multiplied 7 times, it had increased by 9% over the whole 12 years, one increase of 9%. In other words, Strachey, who thought that he knew Marx and thought that he was laying out Marx's theory, and had committed this elementary but absolutely catastrophic error of supposing that he said that since this output is increasing so enormously, you don't need any other proof that the rate of profit has fallen, is falling, and will continue to fall very, very fast until capitalism comes to a dead stop. Marx himself, by the way, if you look at the opening paragraph in Volume 3 of Capital, in Chapter 14, you will see that it's probable that Marx himself, like Engels, still had an exaggerated idea of the increase in productivity, and he related it to the average rate of profit. He says, if we consider the enormous development of the productive powers of labour, even comparing but the last 30 years with all former periods and so on, this is an introduction to his stuff about the falling rate of profit. Well, I think Marx, like Engels, and understandably at the time, quite considerably overestimated the rate at which output was increasing of British workers. And Strachey himself admits that if output was not increasing enormously, like multiplying by 7 in 12 years, but if it was only increasing by a comparatively small amount, and the actual increase was at that time less than 2%, is now probably about 2% a year, Strachey conceded that there would be no problem, that capitalism could adjust itself to it, and simply no problem existed. I'm coming to the end now, but I just want to deal with one of the conclusions which has been drawn from this false idea of what Marx said about the falling rate of profit. If Marx had really said the rate of profit has been falling, is falling, and will go on falling at a rapid rate, and the Strachey said capitalism will jam up, there'll be no profit, there'll be no work, capitalism will collapse. A lot of people, and you'll read it in left-wing journals currently, all using this sort of argument. They call it the final crisis of capitalism and things like this. If it had really been true, they could have drawn the kind of conclusion that Strachey drew from it. But you see, the whole thing is a fallacious argument. What happened before Marx wrote and what has happened since Marx wrote is that in each crisis and the following depression, the rate of profit does fall, investment is curbed and production is cut. But after every depression, there is a recovery. As Marx says, no crisis lasts forever. The recovery from a depression is just as inevitable as the entry into the depression in the first place. And when the recovery comes, after every depression, the rate of profit rises again. And so capitalism has another lease of life until the next crisis and depression come along. So these people who imagine, you see, that you've got the rate of profit falling like this until everything comes to a dead halt are completely wrong, completely unhistoric. That the history of capitalism is for the rate of profit to go up in the boom, fall in the crisis, in the depression, and go up again. And it's been doing this continuously. And I could give you some examples here. There's, the United States, this is manufacturing industry, in the 10 years, 1932 to 1942, the calculated rate of profit, this is in Gilman's book, rose from nil. In 1932, the average rate of profit was nothing. In other words, the losses offset the profit. In 1942, it had risen to 12%. Again, between 1945 and 1948, it rose from 9% to 18%. And from 1970 to 1974, it rose from 10% to 15%. In between, you see, it had fallen and it went up again. And just one example from a company here, Shell Oil in this company, they published their figures as a rate of gross profit on total capital employed. It fell from 22% in 1974 to 14% in 1978, and in 1979 it jumped up to 33%. Now, it's true this is only one company, but it's a very big one. And you can get a side glance on this by looking at the profits, total profits of companies and nationalised industries in this country, and relating them to the total national income, which is not, of course, the same as relating them to profit, but it's quite a good guide as to what is happening to the rate of profit. Well, in 1958, in this country, it was 14.1%. In 1969, it was down to 12.7%. In 1973, which happened to be a boom year, it was up to 14.7% again. Going back to an earlier period, and the same set of figures, that is, relating total profit to total national income, in 1921 it was 5.8%. In 1929 it had risen to 12.5%. In 1932 it was down to 11%. In 1977 it was up to 16.2%. So now if you get the real picture of capitalism, which is that in every cycle the rate of profit rises and falls and rises again, the kind of conclusion that these collapsed people have drawn from it, that the rate of profit is going to present the capitalist with a total, finally insoluble problem, is quite fictitious. And that capitalism can work, so to speak, on a lower rate of profit just as well as it can work on a higher rate. I say as well or as ill. It works in exactly the same way. And in fact, curiously, some years ago, somebody writing an editorial in The Economist had come across the same idea. He said there is no natural law which says what the rate of profit can be. You've probably been reading his Marx and realise, you see, that it depends on a whole lot of circumstances, including the capacity of the working class to resist and so on. Lastly, of course, on this collapse idea, and this is a particular contribution of the SPGB to all this, unlike a lot of people who preceded us, the SPGB, people who founded the SPGB, and how right they were, laid down this proposition: you're never going to get any socialism until you've got socialists. So no matter how desperate the condition of the working class, if they're not socialists, what can they do about it? I mean, if you think after the First World War and after the Second World War, Russia and Germany and a number of other countries were in absolutely desperate position. I mean, on the face of it, so to speak, the whole thing had collapsed. But what could they do about it? They weren't socialists. So in the long run, all they could do was to cooperate with the capitalists and the government to build up capitalism again. So this idea that the miracle is going to be worked, so to speak, by the falling rate of profit, was never correct. It isn't a Marxist idea, and it's quite obvious that there is absolutely no substance in it.